part. So it is not at all uncommon to share information with fishermen. You can show off is what you can do. And we still use the one toe clause, meaning first toe is mine, then I'll tell you anything you want to know, but I can tell you nothing after that. But it is extremely rewarding. It's extremely enjoyable. It's challenging. I dare say it's probably the most fun a guy could have legally with clothes on. But don't know all about that. But anyway, it is a blast. It really is. I recognize that you've got an amendment coming up that you're going to be dealing with. And in my time on the council, one thing that I thought was lacking was current real-time information to make management decisions by. The 3 to 5 year lag that you're dealing with today and probably will deal with tomorrow hasn't changed. There's got to be a way to get around that. And actually, through Dr. Hoey's work with the study fleet, we've accomplished that. What I'm telling you today is not just my report of what's going on. I'm enrolled in the study fleet. I'm enrolled in the SMS bycatch avoidance program and have been since the program started, simply because it was absolutely necessary for us to document what we're catching in a manner that you could make management decisions from it. And that's the result of this everyday reporting through boat tracks. Not only the federal requirements to make an acknowledgement that you're entering the fishery and a six-hour landing notice when sometimes your trips are 3 hours, but every tow, data on the doors to catch water temperature, collect water, every observers, every so many trips. It is 100% accurate, and it is without a doubt the most effective way to monitor the fishery. Not only does it apply to the small boat fleet, but the mid-water boats have been enrolled in it also. It's somewhat of a pain in the ass, but it's very rewarding because it in fact adds credibility to what we're doing. I think out of the study fleet work, one of the most rewarding issues was the fact that now a fisherman's voluntary reporting of discards and catch has the same effect that an observed trip does. That's elevated us from just a fisherman saying there's fish out there to somebody saying this is what I think I caught and this is what I estimate the discards were. That's big. It's big stuff because it's a whole lot different, and it's accurate. It's different from anything we've done before. But back to the river herring issue right now, or to the herring issue right now, I realize the river herring stock assessment's in the works, and it's going to fail. It's going to fail because I went to ASMFC last year and asked them, please, separate them by species. This complex can't be managed as one. It's shad, which is separate. It's blueback, and it's alewife. And because there's been identification problems over the years, we understand all of that, but technology has eliminated that. Because history had plenty of mistakes built right into it from day one, that you got to look over past that. The fact is, if you don't recognize the regime shift that's taken place for the entire East Coast, significant regime shifts, to where we're off a hatteras, we would very rarely ever see a red snapper or tilefish. Now we catch them squid fishing. Even the albatross caught a lionfish. How thick did they have to be before she caught them? You know, I mean, if there's everything is marching north and east. I don't care what species you're talking about. That's the trend. It will reverse at some time, but it hasn't yet. That's where your alewife are. The Roanoke River in North Carolina, the James River in Virginia, Delaware, Connecticut River, they're experiencing low levels of abundance. But the main rivers and Canada, they're blossoming. It's the same fish. They just found a different place to live. You know, herring are very sensitive to a lot of things besides actual pollution. You can pollute a river with light and sound. That's how sensitive fish are. And if that is not considered into this stock assessment, it's going to fail. It's going to fail anyway if they don't separate the two species. So if we don't have a good stock assessment to determine what the abundances are and don't have a way to manage alewife versus blueback, it's doomed to failure. Somebody needs to ask for a retrospective analysis of the mortality of river herring. Right on back. Find out for the last 50 years, why are these rivers collapsing? Why are the stocks changing? There's a lot going on that is unidentified and not even bothered to be looked at other than overfishing. I'm sorry, it's not overfishing. I mean, back in the 70s when I was herring fishing, which I earned my permit off of North Carolina, Virginia, yes, there was a lot of river herring. But I was fishing in the mouth of the Chesapeake Bay. I was fishing in the mouth of Delaware Bay. That was expected. Nobody give a damn. I didn't. It was a heron's a heron. And as a matter of fact, what was considered bluebacks was actually a sea heron. They had the identification then, a blueback was a sea heron, and a river heron was brown, because a blueback in North Carolina is not blue, it's brown. So there was, you know, there's plenty of issues associated with that. So until we make the determination of what that stock is, we're going to have issues. But bring that up to the Atlantic heron fishery that I'm involved in right now. I've been in a lot of fisheries over a lot of years, and I've never been in one any cleaner than this. Never. And you just cannot do better than we're doing now. Just can't. It's impossible. Last year we had a fraction under 2.5 million pounds, and it was 6 observed trips. The total bycatch, total for the entire 2.5 million pounds was less than 0.25%, which included the non-existent dogfish that swim around out there. So it's the issue is now through the study fleet, through the SMAS work, we are putting it on, documenting it, and the observers, I mean, you've got the shoreside monitoring taking place while you're offloading randomly, and to prove it, and here's the grids. You know, this is modeled right after the sea scallop yellowtail, Nantucket sea scallop closed area yellowtail issue, where the industry partners up with an academic partner, not the agency, uses the technology that's available, and you get a report like this, 1/30/12. Subject, river heron update. Since 1/25, 7 trips sampled. Average 0.06%, plus or minus 1.3% river heron. Rhode Island grids, low, the B7, C6, C7, C8, C5, F5. So you just look at this, and that's the areas where there is low bycatch river heron. And we just modify our fishing practices to we don't have to. We're not experiencing it, but, I mean, it's documented. That's the main thrust of that. But more importantly, if Amendment 5 would have passed last year and gone through, and the alternatives that you all chose for closed areas, taking a chart, circling, and this 10 years ago, this is where river heron were, so close it. Every single option in here would fail. Every single one this year. The fish that are normally from the beach to the 20 or 25 miles off from Cape Cod, probably Gloucester, clear to Hatteras, are now in a 2 and 3 mile range. Everything is that compressed. That compressed. Everything that you've got in here extends out beyond that. It's a different world. This is the only way to deal with bycatch avoidance in real time with industry cooperation and an outside academic partner, and it can be done. No question. Because any option that was in this document, again, is just complete failure this year. This year. And I think the other issue is the monitoring, and we've spoke about it. At some point, you're going to make a decision on what boats have to have observer coverage. All I'm saying is now that we've got this information for the last 2 or 3 years, we've got study fleet information for 2 or 3 years, take the information that's available, not 10-year-old data, that's useless, 5 years and forward. Make a determination of which fleets have, if they have, a bycatch problem, and that's where the observer coverage should be. In fact, you could even go beyond that, because I know for a fact there's irresponsible fishermen in every fleet, okay? There is. If, in fact, the records say that this set of boats or this boat here has a much higher bycatch, they should be required 100% observer coverage all the time, and they should pay for it. But if a guy demonstrated through programs like this where it is industry confidence that he's fishing as responsible as he possibly can, he should not be subject to the extra cost of observer coverage on every trip. It can't be done by categories because I'm Category A. That puts me up with the Western Venture. Just using that as an example because it happens to be the biggest boat. He can carry me and everything I can carry about 10 times. I mean, my boat, physical weight. It should either be done by carrying capacity, gear type, vessel size. Use the data. The data will tell you where the problem is. That's where you should focus your attention, not make everybody pay the price. And the real-time avoidance program is the only way to go with that, and the industry's come up with a way to make it work. So I don't know how much more I can say about it. Well, I can talk forever. You guys know that. But the fact is, one more thing. You're required by law with this amendment to take action. You're not required by law to take action on every part of it. You can go ahead and pass 5 or 7 different alternatives or options in it and say on these other two, we want more time to analyze this data. You have the ability to do that. And I'm thinking back to a conversation I had, and I'm going to put it right on your shoulders, Mr. Howard, because I had it with you, with Skates. When I called you and told you I was catching 250 pounds a minute in a scientific net, and your response was, the data's too late, we got to go forward. You went forward, then you took about 3 steps back because you had to redo the whole plan. Current real-time information needs to be incorporated in every management action. If it's uncredible, that's different. This wasn't a fisherman saying there's a lot of skates out here. This was a scientific program that's saying, you better look at this. Something's wrong. Somebody's missing something. That's all it was. It wasn't meant to be personal any way, shape, or form, but it's a perfect example, and I won't forget it because you had to redo the entire plan. What I'm suggesting now is instead of having to redo the heron plan, take time to do it right. This is not an issue. The river heron are not going to collapse because you don't take action. If they collapse, it's because they decide to pack their bags and go to friggin' Iceland. And they can do that. They have the ability to do that. But I just can't tell you that enough how clean a fishery this can be if you fish responsibly. There's nothing that you can make me do. No kind of fishery that I can get in and fish and perform as good as I'm doing in this. It's impossible. School, fish school by sizes and species. And it's easy to stay in the right bunch if you learn that, how to do that. You can catch clean toes of croakers, clean toes of scup, clean toes of codfish if you stay in them. But when you circle outside of that, that's where everything else lives, especially those non-existent dogfish. You know, so give the industry credit for what it's done. It's done a lot. But recognize, because the information is now not just me talking, it's supported by SMAS, it's supported by NIMSA Study Fleet, and everyone else, make sure somebody looks at it and makes the right decisions.
Thank you, Jim. Anyone else from the audience? Jim.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim Kendall, New Bedford Seafood Consulting. I'd like to raise an issue here, particularly in light of some of the problems we had with some of the vessels already just the start of the year here, and announce that there is a free safety training program coming up on February 17th. It's part of an initiative that was put forward by the Fishing Partnership, which many of you people from Massachusetts will remember was the Fishing Partnership Health Plan. They've evolved since the termination of the health care program and are now doing works like this where they stay involved with the fishing industry. There's a large collaboration of people and groups that are helping sponsor this, but Rodney Aver is one of the training people there, so you can speak to him about this, but they request that you register for the free training, and it's available to anyone that can get in before that that number is reached. I'm not quite sure what it is. Rodney, about 50 or so that you? 75. So with the start of the fishing year following shortly after that, some steps were taken to get this provided before the start of the scholar fishing year, so I hope everybody would pass that information along. And we've got some forms on the table. There's some registration forms there. And if you have any question, you can get a hold of Rodney or myself. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to follow up on Jim Rule's comments, and I'm quite pleased that he enjoys the herring fishery. It is a good fishery, and I think if people delved into the information available, one would find that all of the information we have for the fishery in recent time is that it is a clean fishery. So I certainly do agree with Jim's comments. He does bring up some interesting thoughts, though, in relationship to our amendment and what the most recent data is. And we certainly do describe what the industry program is as far as the voluntary real-time reporting system that we are working with in SMAST, in which, to my knowledge, we have 100% compliance in both the midwater trawl fleet and now have incorporated the smaller vessels, primarily working out of Rhode Island, where Jimmy is also working. But it does seem that it would be worthwhile for the council to have that information when we come to decision-making. While it's described in the document, when the document was, evolving and developing, there wasn't a lot of data to associate that with. So I would just request that as we move towards, public hearings and decision-making for the council, that we have an opportunity for council members to look at all of that data and see how it is actually working. Because Jimmy's point that it is the most effective. If our goal here is to provide some protection to river herring, what's the best route to get there? What actually will work? And this program will work. It will provide, measures that actually help river herring. So I would hope that we all keep that in mind. I did attend a workshop yesterday at UNH where approximately 100 people came together to have a broad discussion about river herring, coastwide. And they did seem to come to a consensus that river herring are best, husbanded and homed in the state of Maine, which I was happy with that. But the issues and barriers to restoration of river herring, the one that came to mind and rose to the top in six or seven breakout groups were habitat. And there seemed to be a consensus among the group in general that at-sea interception of river herring is something that needs to be addressed. But it's not going to, it's not going to be the saving grace for the species. And many, many good discussions about how to move forward on habitat restoration were addressed. So I guess in general, I think we're probably expect that the public hearing process on Amendment 5 for herring is going to be contentious, political. We'll hear a lot from the public, and I just hope that the council has, the most up-to-date information available to us when we make decisions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Anyone else on the council? Okay, we will break for lunch. Back inch.